This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan. Time to hit you with the king topic of the day. And there too, BT. We started the show talking about the Giants quarterback situation, obviously happening, what, Friday night with Jameis Winston. So it happened after you and I left the airwaves and didn't get a chance to chime in on that. And for me, as long as it's not it, meaning Jameis is the starting quarterback this year, and I don't think it will be, then it's not a big deal either way, although it does set up, because now Giants are saying that they're still going after Rodgers and Russell Wilson is still in play. It would alarm me in that it seems like it's going to be Rodgers or Wilson as the starter, Jameis as the backup, which would leave the whatever quarterback they do draft, if they draft one at all, would probably not see the field this year.
It's polarizing, there's no doubt, which is going to feed into a reaction here. Giant fans are desperate. They are angry. They are a little bit of everything. They're baffled here, and you've got two men who are trying to, you know, piece something together with glue and spit to make it a representative season, and then obviously, and meaning get good play to start from a starter who is now a retread four teams and a ton of picks and a ton of pick sixes, and also thread the needle on a very weak draft in terms of quarterback prospects. And there's really only two who are deemed top five talents, and they happen to have the third pick, which obviously is not very good for them if the top two quarterbacks go 1 and 2, even if they even love the second of those quarterbacks in Shedeur Sanders.
You know, my whole, I guess the key for me to this whole puzzle is if Shane and Dable are going to be back beyond next season. And I don't think anybody could answer that right now, including the owner, which is a little bit of a problem. Because if they were going to be back beyond this season, then I'd be okay with them sitting back, not forcing the issue. Because I don't philosophically have a problem with not taking a quarterback this year just to take one. Like, if they don't love one, then they shouldn't be taking one. However, it's the years before on punting on the position that have gotten them into trouble. And if there is a mandate to win now, and they are, because of that, going to forego taking a top quarterback, then that's an issue. So we really don't know. Like, there was some thought that they were going to trade up to get Cam Ward. Now it doesn't seem like that's the case. There was never real smoke around Shedeur Sanders, although that would be the one that we thought would be there for him. It's just very confusing as to what is expected of Shane and Dable going into year four. Is there a mandate to make the playoffs? Is there a mandate to win some games? And then also what they would want to do. And then on top of those two things, are they capable of doing it? We still don't know that going into year four here, which is a total mess because they haven't even had a chance. They have had a chance. They haven't taken the opportunity to draft and develop their own quarterback.
Yeah, and then you factor in that, you know, the rest of the roster, though I think they've had a pretty good offseason with free agency in terms of depth and, you know, addressing some weaknesses, whatever. I thought they had a pretty good draft last year. But, you know, you got to stack good drafts back-to-back just to get the talent base up, which right now is by far the absolute worst in the division. So it's not even like they're in a weak division where the doors a little bit ajar and, all right, just some incremental growth. And, you know, they could be in a spot where maybe steal a couple of wins and have a good season while they're trying to develop somebody and doing all the other things that we've outlined now for months, if not a year. I mean, they've really got the deck mm-hmm. stacked against them. And that is a very unenviable spot to be in. The owner's not happy. The fans aren't happy. The quarterback crop is weak. And here we are.
Yeah, the one thing to me was, hey, get a young quarterback, draft and develop. And it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. And if they do, it's not going to be one that we're going to see anytime soon. So for me, already, it seems to be a failure of an offseason. The other thing that we discussed earlier to start the show, the Johnnies, BT, it was a great regular season, obviously dominating the Big East. Dominated the Big East tournament and then falling short, losing to a higher seed and not seeing themselves in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, those who truly follow basketball, not just the Big East, yeah, not that this matters, but just a little context. I haven't heard this yet today. You know, Arkansas had a lot of injuries during the season. So were they really a conventional, you know,
right.
it doesn't matter. You still lose. So, you know, when you say, well, it's a two seed, true. But I do think that if Arkansas was whole for the year, they're not the seed that they were. Number one, doesn't matter. But it does matter that St. John's is back on the map. And St. John's has done things that really very few people, including me, ever thought was possible again. I think there's been an infusion of energy, an injection of passion for a fan base that was dead outside of the diehards, which are going to, you know, take St. John's to their grave. I think you've got multiple generations skipped over because it's been so long since they've been relevant. You got the money, you got the coach, you got the school president, you've got the AD, you've got a strong base of players, and now you got some banners to hang. And then, you know, next year, year three is where you want to keep popping. And the goal is not to just stack, you know, 30 win regular seasons. The goal is to do that and eventually add a Final Four banner, at the minimum an Elite Eight banner. They didn't do it this year. For me, it doesn't take away from the growth and the enjoyment. It was a blast of a season.
Yeah, and maybe there was some level of overachievement, and there is no shame in that because they put themselves on the map with that regular season. Fans got behind it, and you know that better things should be coming for St. John's. And now next year, it's less about the regular season. Obviously, you want to win the Big East, and you love to win the Big East tournament, but it's less about that and more about them going further in the NCAA tournament. This is why I said last week I felt like no matter what happened, now obviously a first-round loss would have been, you know, a different kind of failure, but they weren't going to lose in the first round. Realistically, this still to me seems like that. When you're a 20-point favorite, you got to win that game. So that first game wasn't really a game, and this was the first real test that they had. Yeah. And unfortunately, St. John's fell short. And maybe there was an element of them overachieving and being overrated as far as being the two seed. Either way, it ends in disappointment. But big picture, with Patino here and a good group in place to build this thing out, whether it's Rapoli and his money, whatever you want to say, some of the players coming back. Next year should be the year where St. John's takes a big step forward, much like the Knicks, where you could use those comparisons, where the Knicks were building, then they get to a championship level. Whether they win it or not, who knows? But that's where St. John's going to be next year.
Yeah, and this is where the criticisms, come in, and I've levied a bunch about the Knicks this year because it's a different evaluation period. Like, you go back to the and we've hit it a million times, but the COVID year with Randall and Thibodeau and a bunch of C-level players playing hard during the regular season, that was amazing because that really truly represented a massive overachievement. But now as the Knicks move forward, with Towns and with Brunson eventually back healthy and with Bridges and with OG and with Mitchell Robinson back healthy, it's no longer a cute story. Much like next year, St. John's will no longer be a cute story. Now it's like, okay, this is the expectation, coming off 31 wins. Last time that happened was mid-80s, which is amazing. I mean, it's not 20 wins, it's not 25, it's 31. And I think now what happens, it's been so long since the country, and when I say the country, I mean young players, have seen what it looks like when St. John's is good. And I think next year, instead of, the 5 or 6 Madison Square Garden dates that they've had, Rick Pitino's already on record. He wants 10. And, I don't know who it's going to be, but I can promise you, whether it's a UCLA or a Gonzaga or a Carolina or a Duke, one of those teams is going to be at the Garden next year playing out of conference. And, the aura around the program begins to take on a feel that it used to when they used to pump out first round picks and deep runs in March.
BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Joe on Staten Island talking about the Giants. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Big fan of the show. Sal, I miss you on the midnights. I work overnights, and I miss you.
Thank you. We appreciate that. What's on your mind, Joe?
So I think the ideal scenario for the Giants is Sanders falls to three, and they can trade back with, like, the Saints, who need a quarterback. You can solidify your offensive line. One of these bona fide tackles is going to be there. You can even reach for a guy like Brooks, who's going to be an all-star guard. 34, you take the tackle out of Oregon. And then in the third round, you can grab a guy who's more developmental, like a Milroe. You can grab a Howard. You can grab McCord. The difference between a Dart and a Sanders and a McCord and a Howard is not that dramatic. I would rather balance that out. You solidify your offensive line and your defensive line. You have your best defensive and offensive line since you won a Super Bowl. And then when you trade back with the Saints, if you can try to get a draft pick for next year, if Dable and Shane are still there, then they can trade up and get a better starting quarterback who's coming out next year. Or if you fire them, your next regime has the extra capital to kind of trade up and try to grab a Drew Allaire or somebody like that.
Yep. I don't know if they're going to look at it that way, because think about this. Any trade that's executed, yeah, I'm sure, you know, Mara's going to have to sign off on this, and thanks for the call. But if you're Joe Shane, are you really thinking about what draft equity and options you want to lead the next regime? There's no way you're factoring that in.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, because you anticipate they have to win this year. Otherwise, they might not be back. And that's kind of what I was thinking as the call was talking there. Like, what if the Giants win three games this year? I mean, then everybody's gone, and you got Joe Shane saying, well, I could have done more, and instead I'm putting the franchise in a better spot moving forward next year, and I'm not going to be here. Now, you would like to think that he's not going to be selfish in that regard. I don't think that that's the case. I believe the Giants are trying to, and this is why it's very difficult, I think they're trying to thread the needle of putting it all together this year while also having an eye on the future and showing at least that they have a young quarterback in place.
Yep.
Meaning, go get Rodgers, have Jameis Winston as the backup, Rodgers or Wilson, we should say, have Jameis as the backup, try to win games now, take the best player available at number three, impact player, get the fans excited about that, whoever it may be, Hunter, Carter. Me personally, I would take Carter if he were there, but that doesn't matter. Whoever they think is the best player available there, also maybe sell the hope of a quarterback that they take later. So now that checks that box. Like, you're scratching all the itches. We get a veteran quarterback in here now who could help you feel better about this team and try to win some games now. We get you the best player available in the draft with number three, who could be an impact player right out of the gate and maybe make the fans feel good about the franchise. And then check the box by later taking a quarterback. Oh, well, they got a quarterback, Joe Schmo, from wherever in the third, fourth, sixth round, whatever it may be. And now you have all those pieces, and then they're going to go out there and try to win as many games as possible this year, which would give them some breathing room for the next year and then maybe beyond that.
Could you imagine sitting last year, you know, halfway point, slightly beyond the halfway point, and us saying, hey, by the way, John fans, I know that this year is miserable, but next year you're going to have Jameis Winston and Russell Wilson or Rodgers, and still no guarantee that you're walking out with a first-round pick that's a quarterback.
Nah, I mean, no,
could you imagine that?
No, and that's why, to me, it's a failure. I mean, I was clear in saying that it was either Stafford for me or Cam Ward. Those were, like, if I'm looking at the Giants quarterback options that I feel best about going into next season, Stafford, yes, different type of direction, obviously, but yes, that's the no doubt about it home run move. Obviously, that was not possible because you went back to the Rams. So the next one for me is Cam Ward. And it doesn't feel like the Giants want to do whatever it would take to go up and get him, assuming he is available. We don't know, but assuming he is available. I would not force the issue if no Cam Ward, but I do feel like it would be possible, BT, if the Giants did like Ward or love Ward, that they should be able to get him, just based on some stuff that we heard from Tennessee earlier in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. I got something for you that's fairly new. Now, again, the draft is April 24th and through the 26th in Green Bay. So, you know, we've got slightly more than a month, just about a month. This is on NFL.com. So, you know, we'll take it for what it's worth. I'm looking at their latest mock. And the first couple of names might not force you to react, but I'm curious when I get to a certain point, your reaction. So they've got Cam going one to the Titans. They had them sticking no trade.
Yep.
They've got the Browns taking Abdul Carter number two. They've got the Giants taking Sanders. They've got the Pats taking Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
You got Mason Graham at five to the Jaguars. You got Janty from at Boise State as a running back, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me. At number six, whatever. But this is the interesting one. They've got the Jets taking Jackson Dart. What do you think about that?
I think that the Jets are in a good spot to do what... See, the Jets are a nice, clean, concise year one of a rebuild. Yeah, they have some tough decisions to make on Sauce Gardner. We didn't even get to that last week. How what's his name? Stingley got paid.
Yeah.
And now Sauce is going to want his. But whatever. Jets have some difficult decisions with Garrett, with Sauce, as you mentioned, about their contracts. But forget that. Muji will have to handle that. Where they're at as a franchise is very clear. It is year one of a rebuild with the expectations that you hope they can be competitive and somewhat entertaining week in, week out. But it's the first year of a rebuild with a brand new general manager, a brand new head coach, and a quarterback with some upside with Justin Fields. If they were to select Jackson Dart, I have no issue with that because now you have Fields for now while you get to develop Jackson Dart.
Yep.
That's where you want to be. That's where I'm trying to get the Giants to be, where you have that quarterback in waiting. And for the Giants, if they take one later in the draft, that's not really... I mean, I guess you could have that, but it's not really the quarterback in waiting. And I also don't trust Shane and Dable based off of the decisions that they've made in 3 years to find that quarterback later in the round. So I would like that move if I'm the Jets.
Yeah, I would be very interested in that. Now, ideally, I don't know that they'd be able to swing this. You'd have to read the draft board perfectly, and I think it's too much of a risk if you really like Jackson Dart to even mess around with this. But ideally, you know, you move back couple of slots here, maybe with the Saints, whatever, and you still get to draft Jackson Dart, and you accrue some extra draft capital. Like, that's a grand slam.
Yeah, but the Saints might want him. That's
no, I know. I know. That's why I don't think that that's very plausible. I think that's a pipe dream. I'm just kind of laying out what would be amazing.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And then, you know, again, you're trying to thread the needle and get cute, and then you could get burnt like that.
Yep.
The other thing is, who's to say that somebody else, we say the Saints at 9, they've been, you know, connected to Jackson Dart in some of these mock drafts, and you could understand why. Uh-huh. What about another team that loves him and jumps up and takes... I would not be shocked at anything anymore, BT. We've seen these quarterbacks go heavy. And by the way, that's what the Giants taking Sanders at 3. I don't think that's going to be the case, but I wouldn't even be shocked if at some point somebody loved Jackson Dart more than they do Sanders. You don't know. And maybe they jumped up to take Dart instead of Shador Sanders. We've seen this stuff play out with the draft where crazy things could happen. But as far as the Jets taking a quarterback, even if it were for Sanders, I know you don't love Sanders, but the idea of taking a quarterback that you can draft now and develop, I love that idea because it's the most valuable asset in the sport.
Yeah, for sure. And think about this, Sal. Like, you talk about just an overall philosophy and a clear head and a pressure that is not nearly as, you know, present for the Jets that it is for the Giants. Now, eventually, you know, Glenn and Muji are going to feel that heat to make sure they eventually get a quarterback here. But you've got the Giants war room operating out of desperation, and you've got the Jets war room operating, I don't want to say from a position of strength, but, you know, Justin Fields is at least young. He's at least interesting. He's at least fairly cheap based on the economics of the position in 2025. He played collegiately with Garrett Wilson and Jeremy Ruckert and is a first-year energy. And, all right, if the Jets go 6-11 this year, nobody's going to say that Aaron Glenn and Muji should be bounced. Where if the Giants, we know that their situation is very different. So they are able to look at this and, I think, evaluate the draft not with an urgency to get a certain player or to fill a certain position, which is where you do dumb things, but just to get their hands on a great player.
BT and Sal on the Fan. More your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal back on the Fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. We've been talking a lot of Giants. We've been talking a lot of Johnnies. We'll get into the baseball more specifically coming up at 1 o'clock, BT. But there is something that you and I have to discuss here. You have not made me pay off the over-under bet loss.
No.
From a year ago, which, I mean, we got like now 2 days to do it before the start of the season. Mm-hmm. And also because we want to get that paid off before we start our new 2025 BT and Sal over-unders going into the baseball year.
Yes. Yes. I'm happy you brought that up. So we have to see exactly, as we still finalize things, where we are for opening day.
All right, maybe Friday would be the best day, because if we are going to be on the road, we're not, you know, obviously opening day is not going to be the same as it was a year ago.
Yeah.
I know you had that grand thought of me being out there in the Yankee uniform. Did you pick a player yet? Maybe you want to unveil that tomorrow, at least pick a player so we can try to get a uniform together here before Friday or whatever. I mean, whatever day that we choose. But I got to pay that off so we can have the next, you know, over-under round.
I know. I really love all the things we did. I like that over-under thing. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
the
it's fun.
It is. I got to pay the bet. We've got to get this paid off here. I would say I definitely wanted to lean towards the public humiliation.
Right.
I don't know if we'll have that opportunity on Thursday. Let me craft that here.
Okay. Yeah, you got to get on that because, like you said, I want to do it because it's fun to go throughout the course of the season to have the over-unders to reference. And I would think we do similar where we did Mets-Yankees stuff last year, and we got to come up with a bunch of over-unders. Obviously, Judge Soto will be big parts of it, but just individual over-under totals for certain players in certain statistical categories, team over-unders as well. But mostly, you know, Mike and Chris used to do it back in the day with all the teams as far as picking the win totals. We will do it with the Mets and Yankees only, specific to them, which was a lot of fun throughout the course of the year last year. All right, 888-808-1019. Drew was in Stony Point talking about the Johnnies. What's up, Drew?
Hey, BT, it's Drew. Just really a frustrating loss on Saturday. I'm an alumni. I've been following Johnny's basketball for 50-plus years. Mm. You know, one of my biggest fears, and a lot of people's fears, was three-point shooting and foul trouble, and it seemed to come through. But probably more frustrating was the amount of missed shots in the paint, the lack of scoring in the paint. You know, many, many opportunities underneath the basket. And I listen, I credit also Alabama. They were much taller and athletic team. Arkansas, much more athletic team. You know, as far as RJ, wow, he had a tough game. You know, the kid's a great player. I love him. I hope for some reason he's back next year. But he seemed out of sorts the whole game long. You know, at one point that I seen it during a timeout, Zuby grabbing him by both arms and shaking him and say, "Come on, let's go, snap out of it."
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a crazy that Rick benched him for the final 5 minutes. I understand why he took some tough shots
in crucial time. Yeah, he was out of it. Thanks for the call. He was out of it. He wasn't just out of it because he shot 3-for-17. You could shoot 3-for-17 and still be, I think, engaged the way you need to be engaged. I don't know. It was just something was a little bit off, and I'm not saying it's all his fault. Aaron Scott was 1-for-10. One of your starting forwards, 1-for-10. Kadari Richmond played 16 minutes. You know, I thought that last foul was a joke. Even Steve Lapis, I didn't hear it in real time because I was next to Lapis. I'm doing the game with Mink, but I did see later on that, you know, Lapis really protested that call, but it doesn't matter. They called the foul, and St. John's, you know, they didn't shoot well. But even with the only two or three threes that they made, if they would have hit more layups, Sal, they would have won the game. They missed a lot of shots around the rim.
Where are we at with R.J. Lewis returning?
Okay, I think he's going to be back. I do. Now,
I guess my question is why wouldn't he be?
Well, okay, there's two reasons. Number one, I think if he would have played better, then I think the NBA would have been more of an option. So that's why the talk going into this tournament, you know, will RJ be back?
Right.
Maybe. Okay, that's number one. Now, I think that
I thought, again, not knowing it the way you do, but you and I having these conversations, I just assumed he was going to enter the draft.
Yeah, I was never sold on that because he had never on any mock projected to be anything more than like, you know, mid-30s. But he was moving up. Like at the beginning of the season, he was in the 50s. So people were taking stock of his progress. If you're going to get a second round deal, even if it's a two-way guarantee, you may as well stay in college and get a little more NIL money and, you know, be coached by Rick and tighten up your body and then be a first round pick. I do think that he'll go and seek more money, as he should. Now, I mean, is there somebody that I have no idea? Can they come and offer him $2 million? Anything's possible.
You mean it to go to whatever, Duke? Or
yeah,
something like, okay.
I mean, it's the wild, wild west. Now, the good thing is that St. John's has the resources to match anything.
Right.
I don't think he wants to leave. I do think he's going to stay. And as much as I defend, and I already did this, I don't really need to do it again, but defend Rick's decision to sit him for the final few minutes. Maybe RJ, I'm just saying maybe, just to view it from every angle, maybe he's so turned off by it that he's hurt and he's mad, and maybe that's the impetus to leave, which I don't think it will be. I don't think he's a snap judgment young man, but you never know.
Larry is calling from East Islip. What's up, Larry?
Gentlemen, what's going on? I am sorry, but I got to weigh in for a quick second. I have never watched a college basketball game in my life.
Hmm.
Never. I'm 58 years old. Because of you, Brandon. Only because of you. And Sal jumping on the bandwagon, too. I watched the game. So for any people calling up screaming about getting a drink, this team, from what I understand, hasn't done nothing for 25 years. I've been dancing in the street. We won a game in the big dance.
Secondly,
in this, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish up.
You guys jump.
Go ahead.
Personally, watching the game.
Uh-huh.
At the end, the game got a little. There was too much pressure for these kids. They weren't used to it. You've seen them forcing. And that kid, he went on his own. He said, you know what? He tried to grab the bull by the horns, which you can't do in a team game. But I just think it got too big for them. But for people to call up, do you see what's going around the world today? This is the Yankees. We're in the playoffs area. These guys haven't sniffed anything in 25 years.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on with this people?
That's all good.
But anyway, guys, keep up the good work. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, buddy.
I watched my first college game in my life.
There you go. We got one on the bandwagon. Yeah, and again, just to reset the story, the players weren't there, I promise. It was a rough game, man. They didn't shoot well. And I'll tell you what, you know, from RJ's perspective, okay, you're on the court and, you know, you're seeing a length and a strength that I don't think you've seen in the Big East. Arkansas's got some big bodies and some athletic bodies, okay?
Yeah.
So that was tricky. And then you look
you
around and
you're
like,
you could see it, BT. I mentioned this when I was watching the, you know, last 5 minutes or whatever of their first game.
Oh, against Kansas?
Yeah, you could just see it. You see what I'm saying? Like, where it seems like a struggle.
Yeah.
And maybe getting into the Big East talent overall could be a different conversation for another time. But you could see the difference. Patino talked about it with the SEC and the talent that they have. You see the difference in the athleticism right away.
No, there's no question. I mean, and I remember saying this the other day. You know, like, you take a team like Creighton, who's very well coached with McDermott and Ashworth, who's a good guard, and a Corkbrenner who's a good big, but they're soft. I mean, they're more skilled than tough, right? And then you look at a team like Marquette, and Cam Jones is terrific, but they're not the physical, you know, presence that even UConn, like, they've got some pros, but, you know, they're not incredibly physical, certainly not like the previous two teams where they won back-to-back championships. So St. John stepped on a court with a team that was bigger and in certain regards stronger and in certain regards more efficient. And if I'm RJ Lewis, this is just the essence of being a competitor. If you're RJ Lewis and you've had this great season and you look around and Aaron Scott can't hit the broadside, no disrespect, but the broadside of a 1-for-10. And then you look at your other running mate, Kadori Richmond. He's on the bench. He's played 5 minutes in the first half because of fouls. And then, you know, you look at all these situations, Simeon Wiltshire fouls. Like, you're either going to be passive and accept it, or you're probably going to be a little bit too aggressive, which he was, which then got him out of the team concept, which then bothered Rick. So I agree with Rick sitting him, but I understand why RJ, as a scoring alpha, tried to do what he tried to do.
BT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls when we come back. We'll get into the baseball coming up at 1 o'clock, so we'll have more time to talk some Giants quarterback and the Johnny. Monday afternoon, 888-808-1019 is the number to call. You know, BT, all was not lost this weekend. As I was telling you last week, I was going to take my daughter Sammy to her first ever Rangers game, first ever game at the Garden. All I wanted was a goal. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if you saw the score or how that played out. I know you saw
a little bit of 5-4?
Yeah, 5-3, I think it was. They ended up adding an empty netter. And the first period, though, I was sitting there saying, these bleeps are going to get shut out because they just did not do it. I think they had one shot on goal in that first period. Then they ended up scoring a bunch of goals, so we had a nice time. It was fun to go out there, fun to see a lot of listeners to the show hanging out at the Garden, you know, busting my chops. Oh, so you do come to a Ranger game. Oh, I love the show, whatever. It was very nice to be out there, but it was great to see the Rangers wake up and, with my daughter in the building for the first time, score 5 goals and get a game that they had to get on a day which, I don't know if you know this, we might have talked about it a little bit, they honored Sam Rosen. For his,
of course.
Yeah, okay, so his 40, that was a huge deal, and they had a pregame ceremony. I mean, Sam Rosen is a freaking legend. I love him. I always loved him, grew up listening to him. He's still the one guy that, I've said this before, but say it again because we only got, 10 games or so left to go here with Sam, that he's still the one guy that when I was a kid that was the main play-by-play guy that's still doing it all these years later for that same team, which is crazy.
You know what's amazing? I've said this a few times, like, you know, if you're older, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and obviously beyond. I mean, that would be a little tricky, but beyond, you know, 50s. And if you have a grandparent that's still alive, I've said this because to me, it gives a satisfying feel about life. Like, if you're getting older but you're lucky enough to have a grandparent still, you almost don't, even though you are getting older, it doesn't feel like you're getting too old because, well, how can I be old if grandma's still alive or grandpa's still alive, right? Mm. And maybe that's a weird way to look at it, but I've always felt that. There's a certain comfort with that, and it's the same with a voice like Rosen. Like, I mean, geez, how can I really be getting older if one of the soundtracks from my childhood is still banging out great calls doing the Rangers hockey? So it is just a sobering reminder that it just time stops for nobody. You know, before you know it, I shouldn't say before you know, but there's going to be a day where Mike Breen's no longer doing the games, and just like Marv Albert eventually stopped, and John Sterling stopped, and eventually Gary Cohen's going to stop, and Sam Rosen's 10 games, and hopefully the playoffs away from stopping. I mean, where does he rank for you? All-time voices.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the other names, because we had this a little bit last year or more recently with Sterling. And by the way, I can't wait to hear Dave Sims. I thought he sounded great with Susan in the spring training game, so I'm excited to hear Dave Sims and his first year here with Susan doing the Yankee games, you know, after John, the legendary John Sterling, retired. But we kind of went through this last year, and we haven't had a chance to do it with Gary Cohen, or for Yankee fans, Michael Kay, who's been doing it for a while, Howie Rose, another legendary voice, Susan, obviously. But we didn't get a chance to do it with Marv. You know, that's what I was thinking at the Garden. I'm like, wait, man, the Garden honoring Sam has been doing this forever. And really, this should have been in addition to Marv. No, I know we love Breen. I'm not trying to knock Breen at all. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But Marv was the guy, a legend overall anyway, but a legend with the Knicks fans as well and at the Garden. And yet I don't want to say we're robbed of it, but it shows you, you know, that the stuff with the Garden, Marv had issues with Dolan, and obviously Sam did not. Sam Rosen, one of the kindest men ever. He gets to have his day getting honored at the world's most famous, but Marv did not have that.
He didn't. No, he didn't. That would have been nice. I would have to think, and I want to hear, you know, how Sammy liked the chants and the goal song.
Yeah, she was a little startled at first because, you know, I think you watch it on TV. It's not the same. Then all of a sudden, boom, they score. The horns go off. People are yelling. Yeah, but by the fifth time, she was kind of getting used to it and definitely into it. We got a bunch of videos and stuff. So it was great. It was worth it from that aspect.
But I would think if you had to pick one game to go to from a Rangers perspective this year, you went to the game.
Yeah, that was it. Well, for me personally, because you know me, I'm into the broadcasters and I love Sam. So, yeah, it worked out perfectly. At 1 o'clock start at the world's most famous. It's just a different energy. People walking into the Garden with the jerseys on. We planned a nice dinner out as well, right a few blocks away. So we had that going. It was a really nice day. But yeah, it did make me think, I'm not going to lie, like I was sitting there and starting to envision, man, we should have had Marv like this. And we will one day get, for Yankee fans, the Michael Kay. And had it with Sterling. You'll get it with Susan. You'll have it for Met fans with Howie and Gary Cohen. But you know, you see a legend. These jobs, I mean, think about it, 40 years. If you grew up wanting to be the voice of the New York Rangers and you're your age, my age, you know, somewhere similar, like, you're just screwed. That's it. You weren't getting it because that job was taken for 40 years.
It's funny. Really, it's the opposite of an athlete. Generally, athletes, they just, you know, they lose bounce, they lose vision, whatever they lose, that eventually leads to, you know, slight erosion of skill and then eventually retirement. Broadcasters generally get better as they get older. They become more seasoned. They become more wise. They have more stories to tell. They have a deeper, you know, level of context to weave in history. And we've been I know a lot of cities can say this. And of course, I know we're wrapped up in our own, but you know, in a couple of years, you know, how much longer you think Howie Rose really wants to do the radio grind than Clyde Frazier is already doing fewer games than he's ever done, and eventually Keith Hernandez? Like, I mean, these guys aren't going to be doing it forever.
You know, BT, I will tell you, though, your partner just doesn't learn sometimes. You know, in my mind, I couldn't wait to do this.
What?
It's no, I'm saying the tickets cost a lot of money. The tickets
were
$250 each.
Oh, wow.
And that's thanks to Mitchell and Forley, who does. Uncle Mitch came to the game. Bought Sammy your first ice cream, Uncle Mitch. But Mitch was able to find them. So we got, I mean, still overpaid, but I mean, it was a big day because of Sam, whatever. So $250 times three for me, my wife, and my daughter. And, you know, not to mention all the food and the others, the parking. It's a ridiculous amount of money that you spend for a day. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, man, this is the greatest thing ever. I was going to the Garden as a kid. I love this, taking my daughter here. And she's going to be four next month. And while she had fun, you know, she really didn't care. Man, I look over and my wife is taking a billion selfies with her, and I'm like, can you?
Yep.
Like, it got to a point where I actually had to say, can you watch the game? Stop with the pictures. There's a game going on. There's two. And my wife, at the end of the first period, she goes, what's it, halftime? I'm like, no, it's the end of the first period. It's not halftime, but this is the time where you want to do the selfies and stuff.
Yeah.
So much so that I was telling my wife, not yelling, but I was like, come on, enough with the pictures. The person in front of us during a stoppage got up and said, give me your phone. I'll take the picture for you.
There you go.
All right, yeah, thank you. Great. This is what we wanted. I'm trying to get Sammy into it. Watch what's going on. Even if it's a boring period, I don't care. I want you to sit here and watch the game. She's moving around. She's kicking the seat in front of her. I'm like, sit nice, please, for daddy. She wants the phone. My wife's taking selfies. I'm like, can you watch the game? There's a lot there that, got to go to the bathroom. I just don't learn. And maybe 3 or 4 is still too early to be going to these games.
Okay, here's the thing. Now, your wife could have said it's the 7th inning stretch, so she was a little closer to the mark then, than she could have been, number one.
Oh, God.
Here's what I've learned, though, Sal, with 2 kids who are 10 and 8 now. When even whether it's a Disney thing or first Yankee game or first, Disney on ice or what was that? Paw Patrol on ice or whatever we did, we conjure up these scripts of perfection, all right, in our minds as parents, as dads. Not speaking for the moms, they do it their own way, as dads, as the providers, as the protectors. And we do this because whatever our dads did for us, and varying degrees of what they did, everybody's different. We want to make sure that we do the same, and then we want the next generation to have more. So we create and this perfect script, and when you're dealing with a 3-year-old little girl and 20,000 people and a sport she doesn't understand, it's not going to go perfect.
Yeah.
And it could be a little frustrating, not because you got a short temper or because you're angry, because you want it to be perfect because you love them.
Right.
Okay? So what I have learned is, number one, it's never going to be perfect. But number two, it's not for the moment as much as it is down the road.
When
Sammy's older, and maybe when Sammy's married, or maybe when Sammy's a mommy of her own, she looks back with daddy and mommy, and she will have evidence. Look what mom and dad did for me. That's what, when she was 3 or 4.
No, you
That's why
it.
You do it.
You nailed it. I had it dreamt up and drawn up in my own way, and then it didn't play. Didn't play out like that. Come on, they scored 5 goals. Can you do the Rangers goal song? Can you give me a Let's Go Rangers? She was a little shy. As soon as we get out of the building in the restaurant, she's starting to yell, Let's Go Rangers. I'm like, no, we just left the garden. Like, come on, Sammy. Jeez. All right, BT and Sal on the fan. Dave is calling from Middlebury, Connecticut. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, fellas. I just want to say I really appreciate your comments and your candor about the Giants quarterback situation. And just a quick thought, and then I'd like to hear what you guys think as well. As a longtime Giants fan, season ticket holder, my feeling is I think the implied win-now mentality coming from Mara and the Giants' top brass is not only flawed, but I don't think it's completely in concert with the way true Giants fans feel.
Mm-hmm.
We've been patient, and so like the Niners who took their time and built a team, they're going to get a quarterback, so, we've waited this long. So if Ward and Sanders aren't there at 3, then I really don't feel we can pussyfoot around and get cute, because I don't know that Dart's going to be there later.
Yeah.
And in combo with a veteran or two, you can build some, hope. And P.S., Dable's supposed to be a QB guru.
Right.
So maybe earn your salt and coach Jameis Winston up while you're at it.
Yeah, well, BT talked about that before, Dave, and thank you for the call. I just think Jameis is going to be, I don't want to say the insignificant piece, and I know there was a lot of reaction, and we had our reaction to start the show with it, but I think he's going to end up being really irrelevant in this mixture here with the quarterbacks. But for me, BT, it's always been about getting the next guy, especially with Brian Dable, who's supposed to be a quarterback guru. I would say, quarterback whisperer. There's no such thing. A good quarterback's a good quarterback, but Dable should be able to make the most of one of the quarterbacks that he identifies to have talent and potential to be the franchise guy, and we haven't seen him do that yet since he's been here.
We haven't, which is why, and again, I don't want to overstate this. I know what he's been. I know what he represents. Like, the Jameis experience is what we all know. We even saw him at Florida State. All right, but there was a name that one of the callers just dropped it in, kind of connecting some dots earlier, and I want to bring it back real fast again. Kerry Collins, okay? Not only was Kerry Collins a football mess when the Giants got their hands on him, Kerry Collins was a personal mess. I'll never forget the scene when he was coming out of the precinct where he's got a cigar in his mouth, his jacket's half off. Like, he was kind of a disaster of a human being who needed to change his life, which he did. I think he was the fifth overall pick back in the day. You realize that he had 11 touchdowns and 21 picks, and then this is like year three, whatever. Well, then he went to the Saints. It was completely inconsequential. Even his first year with the Giants, he was 8 touchdowns, 11 picks. Like, if of all the people, even Rodgers, Russell Wilson, whomever else they could, Kirk Cousins, I think, for me, at least for a month or two, I am most intrigued to see what Dable can do with Jameis Winston.
Yeah, fair enough.
I really am.
Fair enough. I just, in this situation, I mean, think about this. He's not even, I needed a clear upgrade over Daniel Jones. A clear upgrade, or at least a clear direction away from Daniel Jones. Jameis isn't that. You're going to tell me Aaron Rodgers is? Okay, for a year, I guess. You going to tell me Russell Wilson is? I don't think so at this particular point. I don't love Daniel Jones, but I don't think Russell Wilson is definitively better, especially if you're projecting long term. So I just feel like they're in a spot. I wanted them to do something different. I wanted the young quarterback to at least say, okay, this is our guy. Here's Shane and Dable finally going into year four, drafting their own guy, and now we're going to see them develop him. That would have been my ideal quarterback situation for the Giants. Good news is that's still in play. Bad news is it doesn't seem like that's going to be the path that the Giants choose to take. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. We'll continue with your calls when we come back on both the Johnnies and the Giants quarterback situation. Let's get into the Mets rotation, BT. When we come back, we'll start to talk some baseball 3 days out from opening day. BT and Sal on the Fan.